Welcome to Androids and Assets, our weekly podcast about the political economy of speculative fiction and looking at the hidden meaning in all of our favorite worlds. I'm Marshall.
And I'm Steven.
Today we have our special guest, Candace.
Hi.
Candace, so what? Tell us about yourself. What is your background?
I just recently, last year, finished a master's in ruminant nutrition. So that's cattle nutrition was my focus. But that also includes like sheep and goats and any ruminants, which are the ones with the four stomachs.
Okay.
And that's relevant today because we're talking about Netflix movie Okja. Okja is the story of a genetically modified animal that is being raised around the world with various techniques as part of a large competition to market this new animal and sell it as an eco-friendly meat alternative that is healthy and delicious, when it is the result of extensive genetic testing and mutations, and we're not sure exactly what, but it's frightening for sure. And so Candace is going to be here to talk about sort of animal digestion
stuff,
animal stuff,
issues, ethics,
stuff with animals that I don't know. We love to bring in experts for you.
Yeah, and I think we're going to have a good conversation about food, kind of food systems in general, and sustainability, which I know is something you care about, Candace.
Yeah, that is, yeah. I liked the very beginning where, I mean, she starts out talking about this new kind of pig.
Yeah, Tilda Swinton's character, Lucy Mirando, CEO of the Mirando Corporation.
And she's talking about how this new species of pig just emerged. There was one pig. And then they naturally bred this pig to have 24 or 28.
26.
26.
Piglets, super piglets.
Super piglets.
Yeah.
That they spread around the world. So that was a fun beginning because my first thought was, how do you naturally breed one pig into
the spontaneous
26? Yeah.
Yeah, the spontaneous
generation
of a brand new species.
There's
one of a new species.
And then to take that one and just make more.
Naturally,
yeah. So I think this movie was really, it played with some really fun themes of like food marketing.
Absolutely.
Because her thing was, oh, it's non-GMO, it's organic, it's all these, think naturally bred. And I really appreciated that because when you go to the grocery store and there's like organic groceries, so much of that is just marketing and functionally very little difference between those products and the other GMO products. You know what I mean?
The favorite that I've seen is non-GMO corn that you can just cook and eat, which
as opposed to GMO corn that you can't cook and eat.
Well, I mean, corn, like heritage corn, had to be treated with lye so that humans could actually digest it.
I didn't know that.
So corn now that we can eat naturally has been genetically modified. Maybe not through sort of the science that this movie is talking about, but it's not corn that just sprung into being.
Right. My other favorite thing with corn is gluten-free corn, gluten-free popcorn.
This corn has no gluten.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
There are lots of things that I see that are gluten-free, but it never had gluten anyway. I don't know.
But
it's never
like,
had gluten.
It's certified. Like they got the certification.
Well, they can certify that there's no gluten in there.
It's easy.
So what you're saying is like a lot of food and a lot of what people are engaged with in food discourse is mostly a marketing fabrication.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a non-GMO TM or, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. Like, and
it's
like, not a, and I guess like the term GMO has a very specific meaning, right? Mm-hmm. When people say non-GMO, they mean we did not go in and insert new genes from a different species into this, but crops are being modified all the time. I worked in a wheat breeding lab where we actively bred for certain characteristics in a way that took fewer generations because we treated it with a chemical, and that's not considered GMO.
Right. That's that breed that you produced would be a non-GMO.
Would be a non-GMO variant, but we are basically, we're manipulating the genetic content.
At the end of the day, you want to have something that genetically is different and modified from,
yeah,
in the way that you want.
Yeah. And basically, farmers have been doing this forever, right? They've been breeding cattle for certain characteristics. We've been breeding dogs. We've been
everything,
breeding wheat,
everything that we breed.
All the crops, yeah. It's part of farming. It's just now it's faster.
Well, the imperative thing is the genome needs to change. Like, that is actually inherent in the reproduction of life. Like, the genome can't, and when a genome is constant or too similar to its predecessors, that's unhealthy for that organism, evolutionarily.
Maybe evolutionarily, but I think in a lot of ways, when we're talking about farming, evolution sort of,
well,
the natural selection of evolution comes out of it.
No, sure. That's not true. Because for example, when I was working on breeding wheat, we were breeding for rust resistance, which is like a fungus, right? So it's still like the evolutionary arms race, if you will, just helped along by people.
Right. Yeah.
You need them to have certain characteristics that will make them more competitive in that environment.
Yes. So I guess, like, I'm not saying evolution ends, but just like the natural selection of, will this species survive better somewhere? We're saying, here's where we want it to survive, and this is what, yes, we want it to survive. So we breed that specific thing.
Yeah.
If we found a peak where we're like, oh, in this given environment where we can control the variables, and this is the best we've gotten it, ideally, we wouldn't want it to change ever again.
Yeah. Well, fair enough, I suppose. And we could then be...
If you could control that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, evolution with everything else is going to be trying to find a way... chinks in the armor that we've created for this new species, but
yeah. Well, the rusts are also evolving and changing.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
But so one of the things I wanted to ask you about also is, so like, what's the difference then between like what you're doing with the wheat breeding and like the stuff people are really scared of? Like, often people say like, oh, there, I don't want fish in my bread, like, or, you know, like, I don't want a spider gene in my bananas, or, you know, anything like that. Like, what's going on with that?
Well, I'm going to say that's not my area of expertise,
right.
But so there's this idea of splicing genes into a genome, which is what's considered GMO.
Right.
And that happens, and it happens with a lot of different types of plants. It doesn't happen with animals.
Sure.
To my knowledge.
It's not legally.
Not legally,
and,
yeah.
Publicly, yeah.
They all get lumped together, right? Everything is like, this is bad. Anything that has been modified genetically is bad in this way. But I tend to be skeptical of that way of thinking. I think sometimes it is. Like, I'm sure most of you and your listeners have heard of, like, Terminator genes in crops, which... up until now, none of those have been planted. Thank God. That's a terrible genetic modification that should never be done.
Yeah. So a terminator gene is when a plant is given a gene that means that it cannot reproduce.
Right. Right. So it is. So then you have to buy seed every season.
Right. You can't save planting. Seed from your previous generation.
Yeah, because the seeds, right, that your plant produces are sterile.
And that could be, and if that was ever to be. That gene was ever to make its way into the wheat genome, that would be bad for.
Well, if that species of wheat was to spread and outcompete other species of plants, then you would just have like a plant holocaust.
Right. And what? Yeah.
Very quickly. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. But there have been plants like types of rice that have been bred to contain iodine.
Like the golden rice, right?
Is that what it's called?
I think so.
Yeah.
It has added nutrients so that malnourished populations are able to have that rice, and it contains a broader spectrum of their micronutrient needs, which I think is a really good
thing. And
it's
clever and it's helpful.
Yeah, like, we're saving human lives by giving them something that didn't occur on its own and probably wouldn't, but it's super, super helpful.
Yeah, so there are different kinds of things being done with GMOs.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like Roundup Ready canola, which has its own, basically canola that contains its own, produces its own pesticides, which is, you know, it's nice for farmers, but...
Does it produce its own pesticides or is it pesticide resistant? I've never understood what Roundup Ready means.
It's pest resistant then, right? Like you don't have to spray it. It's ready to...
It's already rounded up. I get it.
Yeah, ready to round up.
I thought Roundup was also a pesticide.
Yes.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what confuses me. That I'm like, yeah. It's Roundup ready. Yeah. It's resistant to Roundup. So if you plant this and use Roundup, then it will survive and everything else will die.
Oh, yeah.
Which it's clearly very wrong.
Well, and Roundup is very interesting because it's a huge product for, is it Monsanto?
Yeah, so is Roundup Ready canola, isn't it?
But Roundup was recently added to a list of known carcinogens in Europe, European health agencies, and so it's undergoing a big review, I think, as a pesticide that could be actually quite harmful, but is used very liberally in like the North American food system.
But I think it's going to start getting phased out. It is really, really detrimental to health.
So something that kind of about this GMOs and that some GMO is really good or can be really good. It felt like some of the parts of the movie were a broadside attack against the practice of genetic modification.
Agricultural science as an institution.
Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would go quite that far, but definitely it felt to me like they were like on the side of anti-GMO activists. And I don't like when all of the genetic modification stuff is lumped into one thing. There's like we said, good and bad stuff.
And it seems different when you're talking about genetically modifying an animal, right? I mean, yes, we've done it. Like they've put green fluorescent proteins into mice and monkeys and stuff. But it's different when you're doing that too. Like that's one novel animal. That's not an entire food system. And
that scares people enough as it is.
It does,
That makes people very uncomfortable.
Mostly that's just like kind of novel and silly, right? Mm-hmm. But
and then
it's a different thing, I feel like.
Yeah.
Modifying an animal.
I think they also then went even further. Like it's modifying an animal, but then they gave this animal some high functioning intelligence. I don't know if it was completely sentient.
I think that's an interesting comment.
Which?
That this animal is exceptional compared to other animals. Do you think they were saying that in the movie?
I don't know. Okay. It felt like they were saying it was exceptional to other food animals for sure, which I know there are lots of food animals that we're now re-examining and saying, actually, they're probably smarter than we gave them credit for.
Oh, yeah.
But people don't like to think about their food animals as being intelligent. I do think that this one was exceptionally intelligent. Like it created a pulley system when it needed to. It seemed to have functional reasoning and like puzzle solving that's beyond what I've ever heard of in animals.
Have you ever had a dog or a cat?
Yes. I've never had a cat that can pulley up another cat to get to the treats on top of the fridge.
Right. But I mean, my aunt has a cat and her daughter was being almost attacked by a neighborhood dog and the cat went out and like tore its face off. You know, like that's kind of the same thing. You know, defending, caring for.
Yeah, no.
You know, I mean, I know in this movie, that pulley thing was like crazy,
like the girl started falling and Okja knew immediately like, oh, if I catch this rope that's not actually tied onto me but was about to be, then I can save this girl's life and I care enough to save her life. Which I'm not disputing the caring because I think animals definitely develop that bond with people. But just the way that
it solve problems.
Yeah.
You know.
For sure. I know, yes, animals solve problems and and create tools. This was extremely fast thinking.
Yeah, so and then we cut to one of the super pigs growing up in Korea with the Jun family. And there's a little girl there called Mija, and she lives with her grandpa and her super pig, Okja, for whom the movie is named. And yes, and early on in the movie we see, you know, Okja and Mija frolicking through the Korean hillsides, and at one point Okja saves Mija's life. And it's amazing. And she has a wonderful It's a very idyllic, I think, existence that we're shown. But it's all disrupted when Mirando comes to collect their prize. The experiment is over, and now they're going to have the best super pig competition, and they're coming to get Okja back. And this is when trouble happens. What do we kind of think about, like, what the movie is saying about, like, this wonderful, idyllic Korean countryside and Mija and her bond with Okja, and, you know, how this is, like, a farm, you know, like the Korean farm and how it's depicted. Because we, you know, Korea has massive industrialized farming to produce most of its food, as do, like, any other developed country. So why are they showing us this, you think?
Well, I mean, why? Do you have thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, well, I mean, because it's setting up for, like, later opposition between, like, you know, there's a historical food system, like a traditional food system, and then there's an industrialized modern food system.
Right, I see what you're
and
saying.
And fundamentally, they're antagonistic to each other in some way, or countervalent, maybe.
I get kind of what you're saying. I don't think that was the reason they did it in this movie, though. That was the marketing ploy by Mirando, certainly. Mm-hmm. But in this movie, they showed the idyllic relationship and the idyllic place and the relationship between Okja and Mija to set up how Okja was part of a family and was tore from that family.
Right.
I don't think it was necessarily the food system itself, but it was more of a plot device to say she has a family. She's not just...
And you care about this animal,
right?
And Mija, and you care about what happens. Yeah, that's. Oh yeah, there's a story going on.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a movie.
But okay. I think that's interesting because then she becomes the exceptional super pig, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like she becomes the one that gets saved. You know, she had a family. She had people who care for her, and then kind of the rest of them are.
Because later on in the movie, we've seen we don't actually see the factory farms, but we do see the feedlot slaughterhouse at the end, where there are hundreds, thousands of these super pigs being led to slaughter in a very cruel and vicious way.
That is very accurate, actually.
Certainly, but I don't think they went out of their way to try and say that they were humane about it at all, right? It was like jabbing them constantly with
cattle prods,
despite nowhere for these animals to go. It's not like move faster, but there's nowhere for the animal to move to.
But that's, that happens.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to move forward.
Yeah.
Right? They can smell the blood and stuff.
They don't want to go into the chute to get shot in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think also what I liked about that, showing the early setting with her and Okja, was it kind of sets you up to start questioning species exceptionalism of humanity, I feel like.
Okja is really an integrated part of this family system.
Yeah.
We're talking about.
I feel like that was a big theme of this movie, and I feel like that's something I came up against or I saw a lot in my research. So I worked, my research was done at a federal research station, but it was largely funded by industry. So it was really interesting because I saw a lot of research funded by industry because there's very little money for public research in Canada anymore. And in cattle research, especially, it made me kind of uncomfortable just because I feel like we have this food system raising cattle. Okay, we have feedlots, and the rationale is okay, we need to raise more beef more economically in a smaller space to feed more people. And this is always the rationale, we need to feed more people, right? We're saving the world, we need to feed more people protein, right? This is what people want, and this is what we need to give people. But the feedlot system is really problematic. It's not nice living conditions for the animals. The feedlot system is very problematic. Along with having animals that can find and feeding them grain to finish them quicker, that causes a lot of health problems and it's just like a terrible quality of life for the cattle. And I think that was the thing that I kind of came up against that made me really uncomfortable and made me realize, like, we really think that their life is not very valuable, except as a source of food for us.
Except that we market raising cattle as being small family farms, and they're raised out on the prairie, and they graze in large patches of land and spend their summers carefree.
It's beautiful mm-hmm. and idyllic.
Yeah,
and wonderful.
Any like images, marketing images.
Yeah,
you're not seeing a feedlot.
No, absolutely.
You're not seeing them up
there's
to their
mountains
like
in the background,
knees in mud and feces.
Yeah,
yeah.
A guy on a horse,
sick from acidosis,
from eating too much grain too fast, and. And the other thing I found is that all these researchers working with the animals, the scientists, I really respect them. I worked with some brilliant minds, but they all kind of have workarounds, psychological workarounds, you know, to make it okay, whatever we're doing to, you know, because now we feed them grain, we finish them faster, they produce less methane in their lifetime, it's better for the environment, you know. And they kind of pick the things that make it seem, what we're doing, seem ethical. But no one talks about the quality of life of these animals.
This concludes part one of our discussion of Okja, the Jun Ho-bong 2017 movie. We have so much more to talk about, so please listen next week for the exciting conclusion. Music this episode was from Anton and Adam. You really should check out their newest album, Exterior. It's available in a limited cassette run for the audio file in your life. You can also find Androids and Assets on iTunes and Google Play. We'd love to hear your feedback. Please get in touch with us. We're at Twitter at AssetDroid, and you can email myself at SteveSteve@AndroidsAndAssets.ca or Marshall@AndroidsAndAssets.ca. Thank you so much, and have a great day.